PGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
It's all brought to you by Glenview Park Golf Club here on ESPN 1000, talking all things in the world of golf with you 9 to 11 a.m. every single Saturday on ESPN Chicago. This segment is brought to you by Geneva National. It's time to have the driver inspection conversation because this was maybe one of the lasting things that we'll get out of this past PGA Championship. Not only did the champion, Scotty Scheffler, say that his driver was inspected and failed inspection earlier in the week, but also Rory McIlroy, the Masters champion, same thing with him. His driver failed inspection. And some people are saying, oh, that's a reason why his driving suffered as much as it did. He was not hitting fairways over the course of his 4 days in the PGA Championship. But we're talking a little bit about this with Andy North. Is it a big deal? Is it not a big deal? At the end of the day, I think the best comp for the average sports fan is it's kind of like random drug testing in sports, where some guys, they get a note in your locker when they get into the stadium and say, hey, you got to go do the random drug test. And it's pretty similar here. Hey, you get a slip at the beginning of the tournament. Not everyone gets it. But hey, we just got to inspect your driver to make sure that it's up to standards with the COR and make sure you don't have this quote unquote trampoline effect where you're really going to be springing the ball and have a equipment advantage per se. But what did you make? Big deal, not a big deal, because this was one of the biggest stories coming out of the tournament.
Well, at first I didn't think it was all that big a deal, but then as the weekend moved on, then I realized just how much of a bigger deal this truly is. And then after the event was over and listening to Lucas Glover make comments about it, that really then opened my eyes to just how much of an issue we may actually have. And yeah, early in the week, you get that notification. And here's my problem with how they do this testing. You could be asked to test your driver Monday, Tuesday. Your driver passes. You now go ahead and hit hundreds of balls Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. By Saturday, that driver could be illegal, and you just don't know it. So to say that these guys are cheating is not accurate. It's just the way the equipment is made. There is a kind of a life expectancy on the trampoline effect. It can trampoline, but only to a point. And by fatiguing it and wearing it out, you're making that trampoline effect even deeper and more robust. And that's what they're trying to measure. So Lucas Glover shared on PGA Tour XM Radio this week that he knows a lot of players that carry multiple drivers for the mere fact of when their number gets pulled. They give them the backup, not the gamer. And he also knows that guys also give a different driver, and when it passes, they throw it in the locker and then pull out their other one. They don't even have the second one in the bag until it's time to go. Because what Lucas said is they do not test on the first tee, which I find that absolutely mind-boggling to me, because to me, it would be almost like what they do with the maple bat in baseball. How they approve a bat that a major leaguer can use, if it's of a maple, ash and birch doesn't matter, but it's maple because of the amount of grain and how tight that grain needs to be. Because otherwise, when the maple bat first came out and Bonds made it so popular, everyone got into the maple bat business just thinking, hey, maple's the new wood, but they got inferior wood and these bats started breaking. And if you remember the amount of bats that were breaking, and when they would break like a knife, and they were dangerous. In fact, there was reports of different players getting speared. Their own base runner on third wears a bat into his chest. There was a situation there. So what they do is if you watch right above their hands, there's a spot, and it's a white spot on a dark bat, and it'll have a dot in the middle, and that's the ink dot. And that shows whether or not the grain is, in fact, tight enough and approved for Major League Baseball. Golf needs the same thing. It's like after your driver's been inspected, it needs to be marked so that when you pull that thing out, if I was a competitor, I can look to see, yep, that thing was tested and you're still playing that one. Because at major championships, what Lucas explained, and this makes a lot of sense, you're bringing four of the major tours around the world together. You shouldn't be testing 30% of them.
No.
You should test all of them, and it should be on the first tee. And I agree wholeheartedly with that. And I know Andy said it doesn't bother these guys. I think it probably doesn't bother most, but it does bother some, because I know it's bothering me right now. I'm going through a driver change right now, and I can't seem to find the one that I like. And it's in, and when I'm playing with the one and I know it's not the one I like, it's in my mind. And so was it the reason that Rory hit so many or missed so many fairways? Probably not. But was it in his mind? I think it was. I think it was there somewhere. I think if he would have had his regular driver in his hands, I think he would have felt better about things on day one.
Yeah. And I get what Andy's saying, too, when we were talking with him about half an hour ago, where it's so easy to just snap a head off of a club. And as long as you can keep the shaft's not ultimately what's being inspected. It's only the driver heads.
Correct.
That are being inspected here. I get that part of it, but I think it is the mental part of the game that really could mess with these guys. And I do think that part of the issue, too, is maybe the stigma that goes around with it that isn't true.
Right.
That, oh, these guys are cheating. Xander's talked about this in the past. Xander Schauffele, who's won a couple of majors, and it's like, yeah, like, now people think I'm a cheater.
Right.
When, at the end of the day, you would never know your drive unless you've worn the ever living heck out of it.
Right.
But you would never know this thing isn't conformed to the PGA Tour standards.
Your driver right now could be illegal.
It probably is.
It may be. And mine might be too, because I've only hit about close to a million balls with it. It's probably the closest thing to a real trampoline, and I don't even know it. But is it making that big of a difference for me? No, because I'm looking for a different driver. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, It's going to be in your mind, especially if you know your driver was illegal and you were using it as such and you were purposely trying to do this. But if it was, oh, you know, I can hit that one just like that one and it's no big deal, I'm sure some guys are like that. For some reason, I think Rory isn't like that. I think this was in his mind.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I'm with you. Now, I do think to say, like, if we were going to do this Thursday, first tee, I almost think you'd want to do it Wednesday. Because we're talking about it now with, can you imagine taking a guy's driver out of his hands, like, on the first tee, or even, like, an hour before their tee time? Like, what that would do to a guy mentally would probably turn a lot of these guys into a total wreck. I almost think Wednesday, or, I mean, you could still do it on Tuesday, to be honest. It doesn't bother me a whole heck of a lot if it becomes an illegal driver over the course of the tournament.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't bother me. But what does bother me, and I think it bothered Lucas and a lot of other players, is they know that there are players out there that are duping the system purposely for this.
Yeah.
And so while people say it won't bother them, well, then why are they carrying backup drivers and giving them the dupe?
Yeah,
because I know what Andy said. He said, oh, well, you know, if it gets discovered, but are you really going to, on the fourth round, tell somebody that, oh, I think my playing partner's hitting the ball a little too far?
There won't be that driver. Yeah, there will not be policing of your peers in this.
I don't think so.
If there is, then that's a bigger issue.
But if they did measure it on Tuesday or Wednesday, that's fine. As long as they put a mark or can tell that that is the real driver at any point during the competition. So much like I can't ask you what club you hit, but I can certainly walk over and look down in your bag. And if your head cover's not on your driver, I should be able to look and say, yep, I can see the mark. You're good. Mm-hmm. Just like I can see that mark on that baseball bat that you're coming up with. And I'm a pitcher. I'm glad to see you've got that mark because now my life is not in jeopardy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's It is something that's it's become a story out of this PGA Championship, and I didn't think it would be we'd be talking about some sort of rules technicality based off of what we heard and saw from the past weekend. To me, it's interesting. It's probably being made a bigger deal than it really is, but it does feel like there is a simple fix to this.
And there is. And, you know, and it's funny, too, because coming from baseball, I was a GM of a minor league team in West Virginia. And, you know, they had the bat controversy when we were, you know, drafting the collegiate players because of this coefficient of restitution. So they went to this BB core.
Yep. Remember that?
Yeah, remember that. And they made the products inferior. And then people were breaking those because they didn't do quality control. So it's interesting how that sport policed itself. The umpires check the bats literally before every game now. Mm-hmm. And you have to have a stamp on every one of these bats.
Yeah.
And if it's not, you're literally taking the bat and taking it out of play.
I remember my first year of high school was when this happened. First year of high school baseball, and it was like everyone had to make the change. They gave you probably like a 2 years notice, I think, to make the change. And yeah, like all the bat manufacturers you would see on all their, like if it was a DeMarini or something like that, it said BB Core certified on all
That's
those
right.
different bats.
And we needed to, and I'm also a baseball umpire, so I was always checking bats.
And it sounds different too. You know, if you're hitting, what was it, like an A-core or something yeah. like that before? You knew if you were hitting something different.
Yeah, and you could feel it's actually a good thing that they did this because third baseman and pitchers' lives were literally on the line because of the rebound was faster off the bat than it was arriving to the bat. And that gets to be very, very dangerous. But as far as the baseball and the way they, you know, manage it, it's because everyone's trying to get an edge. And again, you go back to what Lucas said in the four tours. Who's to say that somebody over in the Far East or over in Europe or somewhere halfway around the world isn't doctoring up their club in some way, shape, or form? Because what I learned, what colleges were doing just before all this BB Corps came out, when the BB Corps first came out, there were colleges that were making a pinhole down in the knob of the bat and injecting mercury. A syringe,
I remember this, yeah.
Of mercury into the bat and plug it. So that thing starts running around. The mercury inside the bat creates energy. And it added 40 feet to your ball. If you hit a fly ball, it went 40 feet further. So
that's significant.
In baseball, that's
nuts. 40 feet. I mean, you're talking about in most places, dead center field. You're talking about 10% of the distance for
that's
a home
right.
run.
I know. And that was where – that's why we are where we are with the BB Corps. But do we have a – in baseball, there's always that, you know, getting an edge, you know, mm-hmm. trying to steal the other – team signs.
No one's trying to necessarily get an edge with this.
No,
a lot of this is your own oblivion.
Yeah, you just don't know. And I want to stress again, it's not cheating because Xander, you brought up a great point. He's at a pro-am, and one of his guys, after he was found to have a driver that didn't conform, they said, oh yeah, there's the cheater. But yet there were 200 amateurs standing around, and now they think Xander Shuffle is a cheater when he's not. It's just the metal, the titanium, it fatigues. And that's really what they're watching so that they can keep a certain amount of fairness across the field. But I do think if you really are going to measure this thing, you got to do it for all and not for some at the majors. The tour events, I'll go with that 30%. But majors, different story. I appreciate what Lucas Glover said this past week. I just didn't know how much of a problem it really can be and is out there.
Yep. How do you guys feel about the driver inspection? Has this become too big a deal? What would you do to try to curb the issue that the PGA Tour and the majors may have with this? 312-332-3776. We'll take your calls when we come back. This segment's been brought to you by Geneva National.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
The segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, talking all things golf with you on the heels of the PGA Championship. And one of the big storylines coming out of it, driver inspection. Some guys had their drivers inspected, including Masters champion Rory McIlroy and PGA champion Scottie Scheffler. Both were found to have, in the inspection, illegal drivers, so they had to swap them out of their bags. And this is something that's kind of come to the forefront now, and they only test 30% of the field, but should it be 100%? And it feels like, I think you bring up a great point, Mike, like for the majors, this feels pretty easy. You should be testing them all for these majors. PGA Tour events, I would still even say you probably should be testing more than 30.
You would think.
It almost feels like it has to be an all or nothing proposition. Why do only 30% have to have their drivers inspected, and only 30% of the field has a chance of finding an illegal driver?
You know, and it's probably something that players have argued and don't want to be bothered with every single week. And I'm sure it's just a lot of belly aching. It's time. But at the same time, they have somebody at the tee every weekend looking at every single bag, checking to see exactly what clubs are in the bag. Mm-hmm. For all the statistics. I mean, that's how Titleist tells you that they're the number one ball on tour, because somebody literally checks every single golf ball that goes out on the first tee. Mm-hmm. And they know who's got the most popular wedge on tour because they look in the bags. That's what somebody's sole responsibility is every single week. So to have somebody just, hey, while you're at it, test a driver, because it only takes a matter of seconds, mm-hmm. and then you're done.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, there's belly aching about, well, what if it happens just before? And then that's unnerving to the player and he wouldn't know. How would he have known until that point? I get it. So to your point, yeah, a Tuesday or a Wednesday test is fine. But they should be able to ask, let's see your driver, and you show the stamp and I go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. Paul's in Wisconsin. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hey, Paul.
Hey, a couple things. I think one thing is just if someone's breaking the rules, whether they know it or not, just giving them a different driver, that's not much of a penalty. I mean, there needs to be some sort of fear. If I get caught, I'm going to be penalized. So one of the things I would try doing is saying, and maybe all or at least the top 10 at the end of the tournament, and I think race cars do this, they inspect all the clubs. If there's anything wrong, you're disqualified.
That's an interesting take as well. It's almost like the pitcher after he's done.
Yeah, with the
like, let me check your glove. Let me check your hands.
Belts, yeah.
I
think that to do it after the turn, like, are you going to take a trophy out of someone's hands like that? Like, what are you going to do? You're just going to give it to the runner-up at that point? I think you'd be taking a lot of the drama out of golf. And to be honest, the advantage you would be getting is so minuscule. It's an advantage that probably the guy in fourth might have a bigger advantage than the guy who ends up winning a tournament in some of these cases. And
no,
the fact that
agree.
you can probably create an illegal club over the course of a golf tournament and range sessions and practice rounds leading into a tournament, like it's too hard to police it to that level, I think.
Right, and I think it's only because the driver could have converted over the days of use into going from legal to now being illegal. And I think that's why in this sport, they would rather you know that everybody is leaving the first tee before they play their first of 72 holes if they make the cut with approved equipment. Now, what happens on the way in? Are you hitting trees and branches with clubs and things got bent? And, you know, what your clubs look like at the end of the week could be a little bit different than how they started. But assuming just regular use, the driver will fatigue as it normally would week to week. And did you catch it right in one of those times that it was good on Monday, Tuesday, but not so good on Sunday? And I think then as a golf fan, if you said, oh my God, Scotty won, but guess what? Legal driver, now we're going down to number two.
Right.
I mean, that to me would be like, really? I just watched all that excitement for no reason?
Right.
I don't think they'd want to risk that.
No, it's not worth it for the entertainment value.
The entertainment value.
At the end
horrible.
Of the day, this is an entertainment business.
That's exactly
and what it is. And if you're going to pull that out of the game, it's not interesting to me. I don't care enough about it. And like, that's where this differs from baseball a little bit, in the sense that you can't create an illegal bat from use in baseball. You can in golf from yes. use. If you're going to create an illegal bat, if you're corking a bat, that is someone going in and doctoring this thing
That's
up.
That's right.
You're not doctoring these clubs up. You're just, it's wear and tear, and it's creating this illegal club. And to me, it's tough for me to really be all that upset or triggered by something like that. Whereas, because at the end of the day, the guy who wins and maybe is using an illegal club, the guy who's in 12th may have an even more illegal club than the guy who wins. So
right.
the advantage, some guys week to week are going to have an advantage. Some guys week to week aren't. And it's going to change. And largely over the course of a year, it's going to even itself out.
I would think so. And, you know, unlike in baseball, where you drive the ball as far as you can, it's a home run, it's the ultimate. You hit a bomb of a tee shot, your work yeah. just got started. Mm-hmm. You still have to get the ball in the hole.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you could hit a 370-yard drive. It may be no good.
Yeah, because it also, maybe you hit it too far, or you hit it into that throw-up zone, the old 35 yards away from mm-hmm. the green type of shot that you don't practice hardly ever. But I do think it's a little bit different in like those sports, because there's other pieces and parts to finally completing what the game is or a hole. I mean, it's going to require a putter. It's going to require some mid irons and a wedge maybe to finish. So it's going to require other clubs that aren't necessarily being tested, so to speak. So I just think that the, you know, it's the old saying, you drive for show, but you putt for the dough. And I agree with you. You know, it's something that I think that needs to be, you know, monitored and managed and, you know, kept fair, because, again, you don't want them to be just limitless on what they want to do with these drivers, because then you will start to see a difference. But at the end of the day, it's still about who can get it into the hole. And at that point, the driver doesn't matter. And I think we're rewarding great play for all the clubs, not just being hyper-focused on the one club. It does not do everything like a baseball bat could do everything in one swing.
All right. Phone number to reach us, 312-332-3776. If you want to get in driver inspection conversation, how should the PGA Tour and all the golf majors be handling stuff like this? Craig in Lansing, Michigan. Morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning. You know, I wanted to talk about the U.S. Open coming up, but I can hit on this subject because while I was on hold, I thought, you know, if I was going to try to decide a penalty for something, I should understand what's illegal about it. And, of course, while I was on hold, you just went over it. You know, these guys aren't trying to cheat. These drivers become illegal after use.
Right.
You know, I look up, let's see here. It says characteristic time and coefficient of restitution, which is bounce, and how long does the impact stay intact after it, you know, makes impact. And these are what makes the driver more flexible after time. So these guys aren't really trying to cheat. So I don't think so, because initially I was like, you know, they really ought to penalize them. That'll get rid of it. But if they don't know it's illegal, you know, they don't have their own testers. So it's kind of hard to regulate at this point. But at least it's different than when somebody absolutely knows they're banging a trash can, Houston Astros.
Yep.
You know, they know they're cheating. So
that's
these
right.
guys don't.
Corked and I think bat, that's like, you know, you're cheating.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an intention. It's intentional.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so to move on to the U.S. Open, I was looking at a couple of early numbers, and I think it's interesting because I always try to do my homework. And with the Masters, it's the easiest because you can look who's played on that course traditionally in the past several years. And like, for instance, okay, Patrick Reed hasn't missed a cut since he won it. So that's important to pay attention to. Now, you can't do that with the other three majors as often, but this one, they played at Oakmont in 2016, and Dustin Johnson actually won that. But if you look at some of the scores, the next three guys, Shane Lowry, who I was going to bring up, he had a great tournament, but he bogeyed seven bogeys on the last round. So there's a guy that could step up. He's played well this year. So I think he's only missed one cut since the first of the year, a couple second-place finishes, some top tens. But if you look at that course, man, I mean, he had guys like Cam Smith, 15 over, DeChambeau, 5 over, Rahm was 7 over, all these big names. You know, we didn't have Colin Morikawa, Scheffler yet, but it's a tough course, apparently. And so, you know, when I was looking at the preview, I'm thinking Lowry, because he's played so well recently and he's shown that he can play on that course, you know, I'm kind of looking at guys like him if I want to think about maybe slapping about a dollar or two down. And you know, what do you guys think about that? I mean, you know the course better than I do, I'm sure, because I just recently became a golf fan and tried to take in all I can in the last 4 or 5 years. But that's why I listen. That's why I'm all ears. And thanks a lot. I appreciate it, fellas.
Yeah, Craig, good call.
Great
thanks
call.
For the call. And we'd love to have you back again. But I would say this about it. That's 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago.
It is.
So much changes. I mean, the technology, just all of these, everything it feels like changes between now and then, that it's tough to really take anything from that 26. I mean, Dustin Johnson is a non-factor.
Well, I was hoping he wouldn't have been after last week, thinking going into Oakmont that maybe this will revitalize, mm-hmm. you know, his career. But, you know, to Craig's point, the U.S. Open at Oakmont, first off, Craig, I've played Oakmont multiple times, and I've been to a few of the U.S. Opens. In fact, the last, I was at the 94 U.S. Open when that was Palmer's last one. Mm-hmm. Could be the hardest golf course I've ever played without any water. I mean, It is a difficult golf course, and it is the one course, you know, and I've played close to, well, the latest top 100 came out, and I think I'm at 50 some, but I've been up as high as 60 some in the top 100. But Oakmont is the only place that I truly got goosebumps when I went to the first tee, because all of the greats have all played there and have won there. And they take that member par five, the first hole, and you're playing downhill down towards the Pennsylvania Turnpike, because you actually cross the turnpike when you're playing the golf course. But you go down one, and it's a member par five, but they'll play it as a par four for the Open. And what's unique about that first green, too, is it slopes away from you. So these greens at Oakmont, they pride themselves on how quick they can make them. And it's the only club I've ever been to. When you walk out of the men's locker room, on the side of the door, before you push the little doors open like you're going into a saloon to go out of the locker room, It says today's stimp meter. And generally it's about 14 and a half, 13. They pride themselves on how fast they can keep these greens. And it will be the story, the rough and the speed of the greens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, between the breaks, you and I were talking about the massacre at Wingfoot. We could see another modern-day massacre if the USGA doesn't cut that rough, because I saw a video yesterday of what the rough looks like today, and with all this rain the East has been getting,
right? Yeah,
it's not growing grass. It's like growing stalk. That grass is standing straight up, and it's like 6 inches high. Usually it starts to fold, but the strand of grass is so robust and thick, it's not folding right now. So when that ball goes down, it's settling down. And we could actually see, if the USGA doesn't step in here, that is, guys that miss the fairway will literally have to take wedges and, like, hit sand wedges out of the rough to get the ball back into the fairway so they can advance it. They will not be able to advance the ball if they keep the rough the way that it is, with a mid-iron all the way down. They'll have to go 8, 9 and wedges just to do all they can to get that ball out. And I will not be surprised if you see situations where guys don't get it out of the rough.
And it's crazy because they've cleared a lot of trees on that course, too.
Mm-hmm.
You'll still see guys punching out.
Oh, yes. Oh,
out
yes.
of necessity, out of that rough. Some guys used to have to just punch out because you got a tree in your way. Not this. You're going to have to do it just because the rough is as thick as what it is.
And what I saw at the PGA Championship was a lot different. I was watching guys hitting par fives over water in two out of the rough. You will not see that happen at Oakmont. Well, first off, there's not going to be any water for them mm-hmm. to have to carry.
Right.
But the rough is night and day difference between what we just saw down in North Carolina and what's going on in Pennsylvania. And again, they have had more rain there than the law should allow. They had a issue with the tent 2 weeks ago, got blown down. And
right.
They've just had,
that was,
you know, that part of the state has had some tremendous amounts of rain lately. So it is going to, I mean, unless we go into a drought between here and Father's Day, which I don't think is going to happen, you're going to see probably one of the tougher golf courses we've seen in the last, call it, 5, 10 years.
Wow. Yep, looking
forward
to that.
That's my prediction anyway.
312-332-3776 is the number to reach us. When we come back, we'll continue to go through some of the other stories, give you an update to, is Scotty making a charge at the Schwab? We'll keep you updated on what's taking place down in Fort Worth. This segment's been brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
This segment brought to you by Republic Bank. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan. You missed any part of the show today, including our conversation with Andy North. Talked a lot about the driver inspection as well on the PGA Tour and with the majors. That's been a big story coming out of the PGA Championship. You can find all of that on the ESPN Chicago app or find us wherever you get your podcast, the CDGA Golf Show. So let's take a quick spin on what's going on at Colonial right now, Charles Schwab Challenge, where Ben Griffin and Matty Schmid are your leaders at 11 under. You've got John Pach, Chris Gotterup at 9 and 8 under, respectively. And then some of the local guys doing a pretty nice job so far. You got Doug Gim out of Buffalo Grove. He's tied for 7th right now, 6 under, 5 strokes off the lead. And then Nick Hardy currently tied for 13th at 5 under. He'll tee off in about 15 minutes from now. Doug Gim goes off today a little after 11:30. So you can catch all of that on ESPN Plus, and they'll have the coverage as well on CBS. But you and I, we were just talking, this leaderboard's pretty jammed up right now. Oh. There's currently 22 guys who are tied for 21st right now. So if you are 3 under, you can jump from 43rd to 13th with a couple of birdies right now. That's what the logjam is. And inside that logjam is Scottie Scheffler. He's 3 under today, 4 under for the tournament. Was in danger of missing the cut, and even still had 30-1 odds, despite the fact that he almost missed the cut. For context, anyone else would probably be like 150 or 200-1. He was 30-1 after narrowly making the cut, but he's having himself a nice day so far. He's 3 under for the day, and he's through 8, tied for 21st right now. Crazier things have happened. And you can't put anything past Scottie Scheffler, who was dealing with, it looked like a little bit of an injury as well earlier in the day. He tweaked something in his shoulder?
Shoulder or back. He made one of his unusual swings. He took a, he grimaced in pain and grabbed the kind of sort of his shoulder and back area. Yeah.
After a tee shot on 2, I believe, yesterday. But yeah,
so that's always, because you never know. I mean, your next swing could be the one that, oh no, my back. And if, for anyone that's had a bad back, golf and bad backs don't go well together. So, but here is Scotty doing what Scotty does best. He's just percolating up the leaderboard. 28 spots thus far. He's 3 under for the day through 8. And I wish I would have taken that bet at 30-1, because I'm telling you, he'll probably get it to about 7 under today. All these guys got to do is come back a couple of shots, and it's game on tomorrow, and we're back to seeing another Scotty Scheffler rerun. And I know it's a Scotty Scheffler love fest on the show, but he's just dominating everybody.
Yeah, and to be honest, if this tournament's not in Texas, who knows if he's even playing it.
Oh, yeah. No, he's just sleeping in his own bed, driving down the road.
Going to the Stars game the night before.
Yeah, I mean, he's just living his best life.
Exactly. Another one of the big risers today, we've talked about him a little bit because he was very vocal about his thoughts on the driver inspections, but Lucas Glover up 49 spots today. He's 5 under through 14. So he's got a chance to make a little bit of noise. And Jordan Spieth, after a disappointing PGA Championship, Jordan Spieth currently 4 under for the day. He's up 41 spots. He was even through the first two rounds of the tournament, but he's making a little move, tied for 21st right now in that cluster with Scotty, but 4 under through 15. And it's just, Jordan Spieth succeeds at the strangest moments. It's like when there's all of the attention and everything, you'd think that that's when a guy like him would rise to the occasion. He really hasn't for the last handful of years. But then when you're kind of counting him out or forgetting about him, that's when he sort of steps up. And on the heels of a disappointment at the PGA Championship, going for the career slam, he ends up missing the cut. But here he is now with a chance, maybe not to win this golf tournament, but find himself maybe in the top 10.
No doubt. And there's a lot of people looking for that first win, if you will, this week. You know who I'd like to see win this week?
Who's that?
Tommy Fleetwood.
How about, yeah.
I mean, he's always around. He's got a pair of 67s, and, you know, he's going out at 11-22. He's only, you know, five back. So he would be a great win, and I know Colonial would love to see that happen. But these scores right now are telling me that the wind is down currently, so it's a good idea to make some hay, because I have a sneaking suspicion that after the noon hour, the winds are going to start to pick up as they do down in Texas. And I think the guys going off later in the or early afternoon are going to have a different type of golf course to play. And Colonial gets real, real tricky when the wind blows, because it is so narrow, but your ball does go above the tree line. And that's where things get dicey, when you have to hoist that thing up above the tree line at such a tight venue like that. And the winds have nowhere to be blocked, that start out in, you know, New Mexico, come blowing across Texas over to Louisiana. And it provides a nightmare for the players on the course. That's why I think that these guys going out early that are doing well, I think are going to be find themselves even in a better position when they get done with the day, not with their round, because I think these other guys are going to come back a little bit.
Interesting. You know, you bring up Tommy Fleetwood. We always talk about the conversation, who's the best player without a major?
Mm-hmm.
How about the conversation of who's the best player without a PGA Tour victory?
That's why I think Tommy needs to win, because he's better than what
he's got.
Did you know, until you just saw that, did you know that he had not won over here?
So I was trying to remember. I was like, I knew he was in the thick of things, and then I saw his playoff record. And
not good.
Well, he's only had the one, but I remember the Canadian Open a couple of years ago. This was right after the LIV PGA Tour announcement, too. And he lost on one of the best putts I think you'll ever see to win a tournament from Nick Taylor.
I know. That thing was...
his home turf, too, for Nick. Like, it was one of... I'm trying to remember the exact how many feet it was, but like it was...
It was long. It was inconceivable that he was going
to
make
And Tommy made a long one to birdie the hole, and he just got screwed because Nick Taylor puts his in for eagle.
But what I like about Tommy Fleetwood is how he handled it. He got snake bitten in a way that's golf. And his attitude about it was so great. That's why I want Tommy to win, because he's not won in America.
Yeah.
And he should. He deserves it. He's too great a player. He's won, you know, worldwide, but he just hasn't won in America.
8 top tens in majors, another 2 top tens in the players. Like, he is one of the best players in the world. And he shows up at the Ryder Cup, too. Like,
he does.
He's got the accolades. It's just, it's mind-boggling to think a guy like that doesn't have a PGA Tour win.
I know. But then it goes to show you just how hard it really is to win. And when you look at a guy like Tommy Fleetwood, and then you consider what Tiger did and what, you know, Scotty's currently doing, it just makes you shake your head. Like, how are they able to sustain this and keep this going? Because the talent pool out there is extraordinarily good.
Do you ever think that, hey, for a guy like him, maybe just go play one of the easier events on tour? Crush the comp, you know, it's like one of those ones where there's like nobody in the top 20 in the world playing in it. Just crush that competition just so you can see one go through the hoop.
Well, you might think that, because it might take you to some faraway places like Puerto Rico, or you got to go down to Mexico or wherever. But, you know, being from overseas, you know, he's accustomed to all the traveling and playing far, far from home. So I just think Tommy just needs to have the golf gods be kind to him one time, and when it does happen, I think you're going to find him winning more frequently. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to go off and win 10 majors or anything like that, but I do think Tommy Fleetwood is a guy that will have multiple tour victories when his career is done because he deserves it. He's too good a player not to. Yeah. But again, it's a stark reminder about how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour.
It could end up being like a Schauffele thing where you see one go down and then it just starts a little bit of a snowball for you, too. So, all right, when we come back, we will go around the CDGA. This segment's been brought to you by Republic Bank.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Thank you to Hannah LaManna for producing today's show. This segment brought to you by French Lick Golf Resorts. At this time, every week, we go around the CDGA. Mike, what's going on this week?
Well, first and foremost, we've got a big shout-out and a congratulations to our Northwestern Lady Wildcats.
How about that?
Eric Ciotti's team, they did it. They got it across the finish line. They are national champions. They beat Stanford in some of the most exciting golf that I've seen in quite a while this past earlier in the week. So congratulations to the Lady Wildcats. Job well done. Also, from the wild and the zany, how about Joel Damon? He made a hole-in-one this week, and he has played 2,846 par threes before he finally made his first PGA Tour hole-in-one. And I must say, looking at his reaction, it was rather, I would have been dancing from here to Timbuktu if I would have done that. But congratulations to Joel Damon. And speaking of aces, at the last live event, Dean Burmeister and Mark Leishman both made aces within an hour of each other.
Oh,
that's pretty amazing when you consider the odds of making one is like 12,500 to one and then doing it within an hour. But it still doesn't hail to the four aces at Oak Hill. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get closer to the U.S. Open. For those CDGA members, be on the lookout. Your June magazine should
be arriving.
The other
day.
Did you get yours? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just got mine. And there is a lot about the National Open that's coming up. It's packed with a lot of great articles. Casey and the boys did another great job. Be on the lookout for that. And then I want to congratulate the various CDGA fantasy golf winners. Patrick Howell of Buffalo Grove turned in one of the most amazing performances because of the leaderboard that we had. But he took first. Joe Beaudry of Homewood and Landon Holtman of Lake Barrington were their top three. But then we had the beat the CDGA, beat the ESPN, and beat the Tour Edge teams. Well, Philip Crittenden of Skokie, he beat the Tour Edge team. David Browning Sr. of Joliet beat the CDGA team, and they won their appropriate putter and prize packs. But get this, David Marzullo from Addison beat the ESPN team. Now, you may think that that's not a big deal in beating Yurko. Well, they finished 12th out of over 3,000 people. So congratulations, David. We sent you out a Cutter and Buck shirt similar to the one I have on. I hope you enjoy it, and job well done. And if any of you want to join in all the fun that we have at the CDGA and want to become a member, there is no better time than to join now. Go to cdga.org, go to membership, and click on becoming a member. And that's all it takes. $50.
Yep, and it pays for itself.
It certainly does. It certainly does.
That's going to do it for us. We will be back next week talking all things golf. Peggy and Dion is coming up next. This segment brought to you by French Lick Golf Resort.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.